I think it's working. We'll see. Okay, so we've been talking about marriage, right? Spent a lot of time on marriage, and last week we kind of talked about what I called final thoughts on marriage. I'm kind of wanting to move on from it. We spent a lot of time on it, and it's been good. It's been really good for me. I hope somebody's got something out of it. But something I want you to think about today is we're going to transition kind of into parenting. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, probably just this week and next week. And I don't really know what God's going to do after that, but just walking by faith. So just as a way of introduction, last week, we'll review that a little bit. We talked about, like I said, final thoughts on marriage, right? And basically, we talked about the things that nobody really wants to talk about. You know, because every marriage is perfect, right? I'm sure everybody in here can tell you that. Nobody has any problems because there are no problems in marriage. So we talked about, I don't even know what we call them because I can't remember, but the conflicts, because they're not problems. But so we talked about a few things. Things that, issues is what we called them in marriage, because there are issues, there's just not problems. And one of them was conflict resolution, right? Because you don't argue with your spouse, you just talk things out. And so basically there were causes for conflict, right? Because you get really bad first impressions on things. Or maybe you have incomplete information. So-and-so said that you said this, and because of that I'm going to be irritated at you, and a week later I'm finally like, what the heck is your problem? And you're like, well, she said this. I'm like, she doesn't even know what she's talking about. If you would have just asked me about it. So lack of communication, right? So conflict resolution. If we can go back. You can go back and listen to that if you need to. But so conflict resolution. We looked at communication, right? Because I know everybody's married in here, or anybody who's not married that's going to be married, you plan on having the best communication any marriage has ever had, right? Because that's what happens. And then life happens, and you have kids, and you have jobs, and you have church, and you have ministry, and I can't even list it all, but just life happens, and the next thing you know, it's like, I think I'm married to somebody, I don't even remember her name, because you're busy. So communication, right? And we talked about the fact that, believe it or not, men and women, they communicate for different reasons. Men, they communicate because they want to fix a problem. That's just the way we are. What's the problem? Let's talk it out, let's figure it out so I can move on. One track mind. Women, they communicate for an entirely different reason. They just want to talk. I don't understand it. I don't need to understand it. They just want to talk. They want to be heard. They want to be understood. And men, if you could take anything from last week, just listen to them. For no other reason than because they want you to listen. Right? It's communication. Okay, so moving on. We talked about finance, because I know everybody in here is rich and you have millions of dollars, and that's not a problem. But even if you have millions of dollars, or if you don't have any, the biblical money principles in marriage are still the same. You work, you save, and you plan. Right? You go to work and you provide, because that's what God commanded you to do. And you save your money and you use it for what God's told you to use it for. Your job is, simply put, a way to provide for your ministry. And if it's anything more than that, then I'm not sure why you're working. That's what your job is for. It's a way to provide for your ministry. Well, I pay for my house. Well, I use my house for ministry, don't you? Right? Everybody nod their head? Yeah. So your job is a way to provide for your ministry. So you save, and then you plan, because you got to have a plan. A good plan will get you to where you need to go. We talked about budgeting. We talked about all that really fun stuff. Yeah, last week was good. But that's what finance and marriage is like. Okay, and the last thing we talked about was the best one, because I didn't want to talk about it. Intimacy, right? Nobody wanted to talk about that. So let's roll on. Three types of intimacy. You guys know: physical, emotional, spiritual. And just like communication, men and women, they're different. They need different kinds of intimacy. Men, they just want to talk. And just listen to them. And I don't know. Men and women need different kinds of intimacy to be satisfied. Right? Okay. So, that was last week. Today we're going to shift gears a little bit. Okay? And start to look at the parenting side of marriage, because that was another one of the, because I asked you guys, and it actually worked out really well. I said, what are some issues in marriage, because we don't have problems? And somebody listed off parenting, right, or kids. And okay, I wanted to do that anyway, so it worked out really well. You guys listed everything I wanted to talk about anyway, and we rolled. So I want to look at the parenting side of marriage. So turn in your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 6. And we'll get to there in a minute. But let me ask you a question. So as you're turning, let me ask you a question. Have you ever felt overwhelmed at times when it comes to parenting? And some of you are like, I don't even have kids. What are you talking about? The same thing, I'll give you the same disclaimer as I did with marriage. 99% of you will get married, and 99% of you will have kids.
I'm going
to
be that 1%.
Okay, well, maybe you will. I'm just saying, that's just generally the way it works out. So, and if not, just like put this in your back pocket for when your best friend's kids are acting like aliens. Just be like, hey, so everybody should be able to get something out of this. I really do. I do promise. So, have you ever felt overwhelmed at times when it comes to parenting? Have you ever thought that there's got to be a better way than what the world teaches when it comes to being a better parent, right? Because the world's got all kinds of answers. Have you ever thought it shouldn't be this hard to simply raise kids without going crazy? Because there's times I want to go crazy. And I think I've got the best kids in the world, so I don't know how you guys do it. Have you ever thought, the kids are using my spouse against me to get what they want? Because they do that. Okay, well, good. I know you agreed to that. Because today I want to show you how every marriage can be unified in parenting. Right? Because we all struggle with those things. Every marriage can be unified in parenting by avoiding these 13 worldly ideas on raising kids. And no, I'm not going to go through all 13 today. There's no way it's going to happen. So we'll probably tie it into next week. And these are just 13 things that I thought off the top of my head. You may have 13 more that are really good, but I'm talking and you're not. So these are just kind of what God gave me. So Ephesians chapter 6. You guys are all there. I'll get there. This is kind of, Ephesians is what we've been like springboarding from, right? We just kind of read from it and then we just go wherever God goes from there. So Ephesians chapter 6, in verse 1 it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." See, it would be really easy if they just did that. Verse 2 says, "Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." I want you to know today that it doesn't have to be as hard as the world makes it. It doesn't have to be such a struggle. So with an open heart and open mind, let's look at what God has and see how parenting can be instead of how hard it seems to be. Right? So, okay, worldly idea number one. These are like worldly. You can go to the shrink and pay a whole bunch of money for them to tell you things like this, and I think they're all whack. So the first one, it's better to divide and conquer, right? Because that's what they tell you. It's better to divide and conquer. And the way that we live, in today's busy lifestyle, it's easy to think that this is the only way to get everything accomplished, right? Just think about the average busy lifestyle. Take Paige and I's life. The boys are playing baseball. We have practice twice a week. I'm coaching. I'm working 70 hours a week. She's meeting with people like all the time. She's teaching 3 grades of school. We have ministry. We have church. We have everything. And it's very easy to say, okay, you drop the kids off at practice. I'll meet them there. I'll take them home. You have dinner. We'll try to do this. And the next thing you know, the only time I see my wife is like in passing. It's like, what just happened? What just happened? With everything that's going on, with sports, school, church, and everything else. Even in my life, it seems there's times when it seems like the only time I see my family is in passing between work and activity and everything else. I don't want you to think that I'm saying that if you're busy, you're like the secular world, because we're all busy, right? If you're not busy in here, then talk to me and I can get you involved in something. So we can work that out. But I think some of us in the church are even busier than the rest of the world, right? I work with guys that think that they're just crazy busy, and I don't know what they do most of the time. So take that for what it is. Sometimes with the lifestyle we live, it's necessary to divide and conquer, simply to survive, right? Because she's trying to get the kids at practice, and I'm trying to be at work, and that's just the way it works. But beware the danger that can come with this approach, right? When we use the divide and conquer approach to our parent, when we apply the divide and conquer approach to our parenting, usually what happens is exactly that. We're divided and we're conquered. I mean, simply put, that's what happens. Picture a building. I'm picturing, I put a porch on Tom's house one time, and it's like a 12-foot porch, or picture a building. It's got these pillars in the front, right? And these pillars are what's holding this thing up. And it's the only thing that's holding it. This whole thing. Picture a building. You take away one of the pillars, even for a short amount of time, and what do you think is going to happen? It's going to fall. That's the way what happens. Parents, you just stay the strongest when you stay together. And I'm not talking about divorce. That's a whole other subject. I'm not even going there. But you're going to stay the strongest when you stay together. When you stay of one mind and one accord, you're going to be stronger, right? Luke chapter 11. I'll just read it to you. You can write it down if you want to. Luke chapter 11, starting at verse 14, it says, this is Christ talking, and it's like, and when he was casting out a devil, and it was dumb, and it came to pass when the devil was gone out, the dumb spake, and the people wondered. But some of them said, he casteth out devils through Beelzebub, the chief of the devils. And others, tempting him, sought of him a sign from heaven. But he, knowing their thoughts, said unto them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought into desolation, and a house divided against itself is a house that falleth. If Satan also be divided against itself, how shall his kingdom stand? Christ is like, it doesn't even make sense what you're saying. Because if I'm the devil, why am I casting out devils? Wouldn't I want to multiply myself? Christ is like, you don't even have an argument. Because you say that I cast out devils through Beelzebub. And if I, by Beelzebub, cast out devils, by whom do your sons cast them out? Therefore shall they be your judges. Verse 20 says, but if I with the finger of God cast out devils, no doubt the kingdom of God has come upon you. When a strong man armed keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he come upon him and overcometh him, and he taketh him and all his taketh from him all his armor wherein he trusted, and divideth his spoils. In verse 23 it says, he that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth. A house divided against itself is going to fall. That's just the way it is. And you might be like, well, you don't understand. We got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, the kids are doing this, and we're doing this, and I'm trying to do, and I'm just saying that your greatest ally might be the one that you're arguing with. It's the one that you live with. That's the one God hooked you up with. I'm not going to re-preach the marriage stuff, but if you didn't get that already, go back. He that is not with me is against me. That's what Christ is saying. That's the same way in your marriage. If you're not with me, then who is? There's times I look at Paige and I'm thinking I'm completely out in left field with what's going on. And if she can't follow me, there's no way anybody else is going to be able to. Because that's what she does. She just follows. What Christ is trying to show here is that a house divided against itself is never going to be able to stand. Just like the building with only one pillar, right? A marriage divided in its parenting, it's not going to be able to stand. It's just not. I mean, you guys have seen it. You live in the world. It's not like I'm the only one out there. You know, I work with these people. You work with these people. It's life. Here's the second problem that comes with the divide and conquer approach. And this is, to me, the bigger problem. The kids will cause division between the parents by setting up dual authorities. Right? That's what they do. They're like conniving little... That's just what they do. I don't know who taught them that. That's what they do. They set up dual authorities. I see this scenario all the time where the kids are driving a wedge between the parents. And you're like, well, that doesn't even make sense. How does that even make sense? How are the kid? How can they do that? How? They exploit your differences, right? Your kids live with you more than anybody. They know what mom and dad don't completely agree on. So then they just kind of subtly, well, I know that you think it's okay, but dad says it's not. And then you know how they work. They're kids. How? They appeal to your pride, right? They know the things that you really stand for. And you're like, well, dad says I can't do this. But I know you'd let me, mom. or just whatever the situation, you know. They pretend to submit, right? Well, this happens all the time. I'll whistle at one of my kids. That's one of the best things I learned from Roger Heath. Give each of your kids a whistle. They come. It's the best thing I ever learned. So you whistle, and they come, and they're like, yeah. And I'm like, Brian, I need you to do this. I can't. I'm obeying Mom. Okay, well, that's fine. Finish what you're doing and then do what I ask you to do. But, you know, they pretend to submit. Well, I would, but I just can't right now because I'm doing what she told me to do. Or I really would do that. Or, you know how they pretend to submit. They turn you on each other and then they run away and play Xbox. I'm like, how did this even happen? I'm not even here that often, and when I am here, that's what they do. They set up dual authorities. So how can you avoid this with the busy lifestyle that we live, right? Because if I was at home every day, that's my logic. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to quit my job. And I'm going to stay home. And if we're here all the time, then we can work this out, you know. And my kids are great. I'm not trying to paint the picture that I have bad kids. But I could solve this problem because it can only be because I'm not here all the time. You know, but that's not the way it works. So how do you avoid it? Stand together. I mean, really, stand together with your spouse. How do you do that? I don't know. You married her. You married him. Figure it out. You figured everything else out. Stand with them. Your kids need to know that the only thing stronger than their will to divide you is your will to have a unified marriage. And that's hard to do. Because the kids got a strong will. And they need to know that yours is stronger. They need to know that there's no use trying to divide Mom and Dad because they agree on everything. And Brian's like, Mom, you don't even agree with Mom on that. I'm like, I do this time. You know, and they need to know that no matter what, I agree with her. Even if I don't. We can talk it out later, we'll work it out, but don't give them a crack, because it's like a crack in your foundation. The next time you go down there, it's like this big. You got to take care of it real quick. Don't give them anything. Even when you really don't, they need to think that you do. You need to be like, this is what I was thinking this morning. You've seen Fireproof, the movie Fireproof, most of you have. You need to be like the salt and pepper shaker that the dude, he glues them together. And the guy at the time, he's not saving, he's like, what are you doing? I don't even like pepper. Now I can't use the salt. And he's trying to break them apart. He's like, hang on. If you break them apart now, you're either going to break one or both of them. And you're just going to have pieces everywhere. And then none of it's any good to you. You have to be like that with your kids. Know that you can be unified in your parenting if you avoid the divide and conquer method, right? Because sometimes it's good. Sometimes you have to, because life's busy. But you have to avoid the things that come with it, right? So, okay, worldly idea number two, right? You can't do the divide and conquer. I'm going to try to get through four of these. We'll see what happens. Worldly idea number two. It's better to want obedience than to expect it. And you're like, what? Well, some of these aren't exactly what you would hear at the shrink, but these are what you can look at people's lives and you're like, that must be what you want. Right? So, okay. You may say that even the world expects their kids to be obedient. But if you look at most families, it seems like they simply want it to happen rather than expect it to happen, right? They're just like, I just want my kids to obey today. Just once. It's kind of like the story of the farmer who's like, I really need it to rain. I really want it to rain. And he's like, well, one of these days, if I start seeing clouds in the sky, maybe I'll plant some seed. Well, then you have the other farmer who's like, I'm expecting God to provide. So even though the sun's scorching and it doesn't look like it's going to rain, I'm going to plant the seed. And I just expect that it's going to, I expect God's going to provide. That's the same type of thing. Have you ever seen this scenario? I was writing this out this morning. I was just laughing as I was writing it out because I know you've all seen this. So here's the scenario. Parent gives child a command. Child says, I don't want to. Parent says, I don't care if you want to. Do it anyway. Child says, no. And you're like, this doesn't really happen. No, it really does. I see this all the time. So, child says, no. Parent says, if you don't do this, then I'm going to come up there. Child says, I don't want to. Parent says, one. Two. If I get to three, you know what's going to happen. Child still doesn't move. Parent yells, three. And the child turns their attention to the parent to see if they're really getting up, because you can say three but not actually move. Still not doing what they're told to do. The parent finally starts getting up, and immediately the child springs into action. The parent sits back down, and life goes on. In this scenario, who's training who? We say that we're training our children. We call it child training. But it sounds more like parent training than child training. The kids have the parents figured out. They know that you're tired. They know you're wore out. They know that you really don't want to get up. So I just, you know what? I can read Dad. And on the days that he's on point, I'm going to listen. But on the days he's tired, he's not going to do anything. So they can read you. That's just the way they are. In most families, the kids have the parents trained and not the other way around. And I'm just saying. I heard that one time, I like that. If you want to be unified in your parenting, then you have to expect obedience rather than just want it. I can want my kids to obey all day long, and they can look at me and laugh. I have to expect it. And there's things that go into that. Genesis chapter 22. You guys know this story. Abraham and Isaac. I'm just going to read a little bit of it, because I think Abraham and Isaac are just a really good picture of what obedience looks like and what submitting looks like. Verse 6, it says, "And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together." I just taught on this a couple months ago. You guys know the story. "And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Isaac's like, something's not making sense. "And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together." He's like, okay, I trust you, Dad. "And they came to the place which God had told him of. And Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound his son, Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son." And you guys know the story. We've looked at this before, so I don't want to spend a lot of time. But the point here is Abraham, he expected obedience from Isaac. He really expected it. He didn't hope for it, he expected it. And you say, what do you mean? We saw this. Abraham, he's over 100 years old. I don't know how many 100-year-old dudes you know, but I'm just expecting they're not getting around real great. And I understand things were a little different back then, but still. He's got to be a little weak in the knee or something, because I'm 30 and I feel like I'm falling apart. So take that for what it is. And Isaac, he's around 16 years old when this happens. I'm pretty sure if Isaac wanted to get away, I know he could outrun him, but he's probably a lot stronger too. So if Isaac had wanted to put up a fight, he could have, but he knew. And been trained from a child that when his father told him to do something, he was to obey. And you're like, well, it doesn't make sense. No, it does. If you train your children from the time that they're little, if you train them, they learn to trust you in a way that even your most loyal dog won't trust you. They will follow you, and they're just like, I don't know why Dad said to do this, but that's just the way they are. You may say, well, you don't know my kids. That's unrealistic. That's why it's called child training and not parent training. My wife said this once, and I pretty much stole it to be my own catchphrase, so don't tell her. Your child's obedience will only be as consistent as your discipline of them when they don't obey. And I probably butchered it, but that's pretty much how I get it. Their obedience is only as consistent as your discipline. You may think that means all I ever do. You may say, that means all I'm going to do is discipline my kids, because you don't know my kids. At first, you're right. But after a while, your kids are going to realize you're serious, and they're going to see that obedience is easier than the alternative. When we realize this truth, I remember Paige playing what she called the obey game with our kids. We just got saved, and our kids were, we only had two at the time, and we just raised them like the world raises them. And it was just like this new concept of having your children obey you. And she played this game where she'd be like, and they were littler at the time, I can't imagine Brian doing this now, but she'd be like, I want you to go and touch the doorknob. And they'd be like, okay. And they'd go and touch it. Okay, I want you to stop. And she would do this for hours, just different things. And it was just like the affirmation they would get when they did something right. But then when they did something they weren't supposed to do, it was just teaching them what obedience really was. Also, key to remember is just like you, like I said, just like you reward your child's disobedience with discipline, reward their obedience with a reward, even if it's words of affirmation. I'm not saying you got to reward your kid for everything they do, but when they obey, when you tell them to do something, you need to at least say thanks or something. Give them something to work with. The last thing to remember when it comes to expecting obedience is knowing that your spouse is standing behind you. Remember, this is unity in parenting. Remember the last point. Kids are going to try to divide you, so you have to stand together. If my wife tells the kids to do something and they choose to disobey, they know that it's not her who's coming after them. And that's just the way it works in my house. The same goes the other way. When one of the kids chooses to disrespect me or disobey, Paige is on them quicker than I am. And that's key for the kids to see, so they know that mom and dad are on the same team. And it's not their team. They're working together. Our kids know that if they choose to disobey, then mom and dad are standing together and there's going to be a reward for their disobedience. They love it when I call it that. This is your reward. When you both expect obedience from your children, then having unity in your parenting, that's a natural result. You don't want it, you expect it. It's just something that's expected, and you train them. Right? Okay, worldly idea number three. This is what everybody wants to talk about. It's better to discipline without the rod. And everybody's like, oh boy. I'm not going to get into it, really. This is a subject that has and continues to divide marriages even today. How do we go about disciplining our kids, right? The world deals with it. The church deals with it. People at work deal with it. I mean, it's just the way. Do we spank them? Do we put them in time out? Do we yell at them? Do we simply disown them? What do you do? What do you do? The first thing I want to look at when it comes to this is, why are we disciplining them in the first place? Right? Why are you disciplining in the first place? Because there has to be motive behind what you're doing. My motive for disciplining my kids isn't because I want perfect little robots walking around. This might offend somebody. I really don't care how perfect my kids grow up knowing the churched way to live. I don't know if that's the way I want to put it, but I don't want my kids to be people to think, well, they're just church kids. That's not what I want. I want my kids to be obedient, to know that they're to respect authority, and to know that God is God, and that's who they need to follow. That's basically it. The rest of it kind of gets worked out. So why do we do it in the first place? Because I told you to? I mean, that's what I said in the last point. You got to discipline them. I hope that's not why. Proverbs 22:6. We had this verse painted on Hallie's wall before we moved. Hopefully it's still painted on the wall of the people who moved there, but who knows. You guys know the verse. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Right? Everybody knows that verse. We're commanded to train up our children, and that's why we discipline them. Because God told us to. You may say, well, I know that, but it doesn't answer the question of how we discipline them. Right? I know I'm supposed... You're right. I didn't... The next thing I want to see is that just because your spouse and you don't see eye to eye on this, well, I think we should spank them. I think we should put them in timeout. Just because you don't agree doesn't make your spouse wrong. Right? Just because they think this and you think that doesn't mean that they're wrong and you're right, because that's just the way it is. They don't agree with me, so you must be wrong. That only works at work. Because they have to submit. It doesn't work like that at home. Just because you don't agree doesn't mean that they're wrong. Remember from the previous points, it's key that your kids do not see you divided. They're going to use it to their advantage. So what then? If we disagree on this, I want to put them on timeout. She wants to spank them. Other way around, how do you resolve it? Remember, it's not about being right. It's about having unity in your parenting, right? Because you need to see the... Believe it or not, there are times in my marriage when Paige and I don't see eye to eye on an issue. I know, it's a shocker. It happens. So instead of arguing until one of us gets tired and gives in, because that's how most arguments get resolved in the world, we try to see what the Word has to say about it. So that's what we're going to do in this scenario, all right? Let's just see what God has to say. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong or you're right or anything else. I'm going to tell you what the Bible says. Proverbs 22:15, write it down. It says, "Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him." As much as it may be hard for some people to understand, the Bible never uses timeout as a correction tool for children. At least not in my version. It might be in some of the new ones, but we're not going there. You may say, well, times have changed. The Bible's not relevant on this anymore. How can you choose what the Bible means and doesn't? Just tell me that. How can you pick and choose? You believed it when it said God loved you. You believed it when God said He could save you from your sin. You believed it when it said you were a child of God once you repented. You believed it when it said anything else, but when it says discipline with the rod, suddenly it's outdated and meaningless, right? Well, here's what the Bible says about it. Here's some verses. Proverbs 13:24. "He that spareth his rod hateth his son." Think about that. "But he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." The Word says if you love them, then you're going to use the rod. Here's some other verses. Proverbs 19:18. "Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying." Don't give in to their... They're just trying to get your emotions. It says, chasten while there's still hope. God knows they're impressionable when they're young. Proverbs 23:13-14 says, "Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and thou shalt save his soul from hell." God's saying you have to train them, correct them, get them on the right path. And He's very specific on how to do it. Proverbs 29:15, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." Proverbs 20:30 says, "The blueness of a womb cleanseth away evil, so do stripes the inward parts of the belly." The point to see here is that the Bible is consistent in what it says. It doesn't say this or try that. It's just very consistent in what it says. The thing to understand is that consistency is the key. Remember, your child's obedience will only be as consistent as your discipline, right? Whatever you do, be consistent with it. Use the same method every time. Switching back and forth between discipline methods will only bring confusion to the situation. Another key to discipline is to start early, right? Start when they're little. I remember when Hallie was little, like really little. She was probably like 10 months old. You're like, what? No, just listen. Paige got this little, it was a dowel rod. It looked like a skewer. It looked like a shrimp skewer. And it got to the point where we had this, I think it's called a credenza, the thing that sits in front of the TV on the floor. And there was pictures and stuff on it. And Hallie would crawl over there. And she'd climb up there and mess with the stuff. And Paige would be like, no, you can't do that. And that's fine. You direct her away from us, no big deal. And you do this for a while. And she would crawl. This is what she always did. She'd crawl over there. And it got to the point where she would crawl over there. Paige would take her away. She'd crawl back over there. She would go to touch it. She would stop. She would turn and look at Paige and grin. And then she would go to reach for it. That's when you start correcting them. Paige would take this little thing and just tap her hand with it. And it was just like immediately in her brain, it was just like, huh, that doesn't feel good. Maybe I shouldn't do that. Start early. You start training them early. And you're not training them to be perfect little robots. You're training them to obey. That's the concept you're trying to teach them. I know I've said it already, but the thing you really have to get here is unity and consistency. If you and your spouse are in disagreement, the kids are going to spot the crack, drive the wedge, and you're both never going to have peace. And it's going to be something that you never agree on until the time that they're out. And you're going to look back and say, we should have done it this way, or we should have done it this way. There has to be unity. Remember the scenario from earlier? You have until I count to three to do this, or I'm going to come up there. I know you've heard that. If you're consistent with your kids, this will go away. And you're like, what do you mean? If your kids know that if I don't obey, I'm going to get the rod every time. Not just when mom's in the mood, or when I disobey, there's punishment. You'll start to see a change. Simple as that. Remember, their obedience is only as consistent as your discipline. You're like, I don't even have kids, so I don't care. I promise, these are like gold. I'm telling you. If you desire unity in your parenting, and this is an area where you're going to have to come to an agreement on. And remember that they're not wrong. Just because they have a different view doesn't mean they're wrong. But the Bible is right. So take that for what it is. They're not wrong, but the Bible's right. Okay, worldly idea number four. Last one. Well, there's a whole bunch more, but we'll have to do them next week. They'll be shorter next week. But it's good. I think these are really good things as I was thinking through them. And I'm like, I'm thinking about past points on doing this. I'm like, I only think of a couple people that have young kids, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't change the principle of what it is. I'm sure you could talk to Brian or Tom, and these are issues that get brought up in counseling all the time. So these are things that God brought up to me, and I'm like, okay, this is what we're going to talk about. So world idea number four. It's better to yell when you want to show that you're really serious. Because that's what we do. That's what the world says. We don't say that, but they do that, so that must be what they mean. We all know this person, right? You know. Don't laugh, I haven't said anything. You know, the person who can be having a perfectly normal conversation with you, and their kid's doing something that's irritating, so they politely say, excuse me, to then in turn scream at their kid to straighten up, and then they come back to the conversation like nothing happened. I'm sure you've had this. I've seen it. I see it all the time. And it's just like, it's no big deal. I think we all may be guilty of this at some time or another, but just like the last point, consistency is the key. I don't think any of us simply have the desire to yell at our kids. At least we shouldn't. If you do, we've got a different issue. But it's the repeated, over and over and over, annoying action that eventually gets under our skin, that eventually leads us to a breaking point where we're like, just stop it! I'm just saying. I've seen it. Here's the solution. I'm not saying I got all the answers, but here's the solution. Simply discipline them for their action before you get irritated. What does that mean? As soon as they do something that they know they shouldn't do, that you know they shouldn't do, take care of it before you get to a snapping point. When your children know that what they're doing is something wrong, there will be, when they know that when they do something wrong there's going to be discipline, it's going to be no surprise to them when even before you get mad, they get the rod for their bad behavior. It's not like a surprise, like, well, she's not even mad yet. Why is she? When there's consistency, there's no question. The last thing that we desire in our children, I can speak for Paige and I both, the last thing we desire is our children to associate discipline with mom or dad being mad. I'm going to say that again. The last thing that we desire in our children is to associate discipline with mom or dad being mad. That's the last thing I want them to think of. When I don't want that to be associated at all, where they're spanking me because they're mad. because I'm not a huge dude, but I'm bigger than they are. And if it gets to the point where I'm mad, then that's where things get out of hand. I want my children to know that my word is final, even if I'm not yelling at them. That even while I'm just saying, this is what you need to do, if they choose not to do it, then I mean that just as much as if I was screaming it at them. And this is hard for me because I don't yell a lot. I'm just not that kind of dude. But some people do. It's not a big deal. But Proverbs 15:1 says, "A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger." Right? You know what that means. Proverbs 15:18 says, "A wrathful man stirreth up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife." Right? Be patient. Proverbs 29:22 says, "An angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression." Right? And this is a really good one. It parallels what we started with. Colossians 3:21 says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." Their countenance feeds off of you. That's just the way it is. You might be like, "Well, that wasn't..." No, it really does. When mom's mad, when dad's mad, everybody's walking on pins and needles because they don't want to be the next one in line. I mean, it's just... Provoke not your children to anger, because you don't want to discourage them. Colossians tells us not to provoke them to anger, but that's hard to do when we're always yelling at them. It just is. Even during times of discipline, you should be very calm and simply explain to them that they disobeyed, and this is the consequence or reward, if you want to call it that, for their action. It's very simple. This is what happens. When discipline is paired with anger, you're instilling fear into your child, not obedience. And think about that. Do you really want your kids to be scared of you? I think that's what some parents are going for, but I don't want. Anger during discipline is what gives the rod a bad connotation. Just, I mean, if you want to just completely... People think, you can't do that because if you do it the way God told you to, it's not bad. This is why getting to discipline before you get angry is key in child training. Also note, once again, the unity between the husband and the wife is huge in this area, right? The kid shouldn't think of you as the good cop, bad cop. "Well, I know I can get away with this with mom, but not with dad." Or, "I know that dad will let me do this." This happens even with my kids. I think my kids are great, but they'll come up and they'll say, "Hey, mom." I'll be like, "What do you need, Hallie?" "I'm asking mom." "Well, why are you asking mom?" "Because you're going to say no." You need to be consistent. They need to know that mom and dad, they're serious when they're talking. And they're going to back each other up because they're consistent. They should see you as one. That's kind of weird because God made you one. Remember, we looked at all that, and your kids should see that as well. Simply remember that every marriage can be unified in their parenting if they simply avoid these worldly ideas on raising kids. So we'll stop there because we're out of time, but I want you guys to know that these are things that people deal with. These are things that I deal with. And I'm not saying that I got it all together, because I'm probably more out there than you guys are. And I want you to know that there is victory over these things, and it's in the Word. So we'll roll through the rest of them next week. They'll get quicker as we go. But just to know that it doesn't have to be as hard as it seems to be. And you might be like, "Well, I'm done raising kids," or "I don't even have kids." Well, it doesn't matter. There's a situation where this is going to come up. And just know that God has it taken care of if you'll just simply listen. So we'll stop there. We'll roll next week. Actually, I think Bill's in here next week, and then I'll be in here after that for a few weeks in a row, and we'll see. But let's pray, and we will be done.